Today on the DML News Podcast, a major catastrophe in Baltimore when a ship mysteriously bangs into a bridge and knocks it all down. What happened? What could have happened? Is it foul play? We'll go over that. Plus, Donald J. Trump gets his fine lowered, and many are starting to say it's unconstitutional to begin with. We'll analyze that. P. Diddy on the run. He's in trouble. We're going to tell you what we know. And then we have some stuff on illegal immigration, including caravans coming over, arrests that will blow your mind, and of course, more murders and things that are just outrageous, all of them leaving blood on Joe Biden's hands. So get ready. We're going to have a good one today, and it's all unfiltered.
Dennis Michael Lynch gives you his word, and he will never let you down. He will always fight for America.
The only one who really puts his money where his mouth is Dennis
Michael Lynch. Hello, I'm Dennis Michael Lynch, and I thank you for joining me today. I got my son Ryan on the controls. I've got my son Dennis across from me, ready to tell us everything we need to know about everything there is to know. We start off by letting you know that today is one of the last days for the DML CBD BOGO event. This will be one of the last ones we ever have as a company. We have been warning our customers, both new and old, get in there and get there now. Some people have been buying up a year's worth of supply. This is a very smart thing to do. I've explained why this is happening. You could go to dmlcbd.com/BOGO, B-O-G-O, not only for the details, because there's a video there explaining what's going on and how it will impact you, both short and long term. And then, of course, you could use that page and go buy whatever it is you like. I do know this. Today is the last day for the BOGO on the hand and foot cream. And the reason being is we have sold so many of these and we have almost nothing left. You want to get in dmlcbd.com/BOGO. You could go to any single one of the items that's there, including the hand and foot cream. And whatever it is that you buy, we are going to double your order for free. You buy one, we give you two. You buy three, we give you six. You buy 10, we give you 20. You buy 20, we buy you, give you 40. Whatever it is you buy, we're going to double your order. This is unheard of in the CBD business. And it is, remember, we have the Ferrari of the products that you would want, right? So we're giving you Ferrari at basically Pinto prices, if anybody remembers a Pinto, a little before your time, Denny. Dennis, let's start off what unfolded last night at about 1:30, quarter to 2 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time, when a cargo ship in the middle of the night just winds up hitting into the a major expansion bridge in Baltimore. I'm going to let you give the details and everything. And the entire bridge collapses. Now, what Ryan is going to do is he's going to play over and over and over again while you're explaining it. What exactly we do know at this point. And then I'm going to give my little two cents about what I know about ships. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this happened late last night, I think around 1:30 a.m. It's the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which, my gosh, I mean, if you recognize that name, that is the man who wrote the Star Spangled Banner. But this bridge is about 2 miles or close to 2 miles long, very vital to just access points, even to I-95. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, if you're watching in the video, but I'll describe it, there is a giant cargo ship. I believe it was of Singaporean descent because there was a Singaporean flag on there. And it was heading for Sri Lanka, which is basically on the other side of the world. And in the video, you can see as it's approaching the bridge, it's nowhere near the actual access point where it could safely go under. It's near one of the main columns. And as it's approaching, you can almost see the, actually you can clearly see it, the lights on the cargo ship start going on and off. In fact, it goes off for a bit, then it kind of comes back on, then it goes off again. And as it comes back on yet again, you can almost see that it tries to steer away, but there's no doubt in my mind that they were completely off course and boom, hits right into the bridge and it comes collapsing down like a ton of bricks.
Now, you know, look, this is one of those things where Denny and I are always challenged because when we're recording the show, we know that by the time you're listening or watching, there will be new updates on that. So,
yeah. I mean, just really quick, even the casualty count, there's speculation between 7 to 20 people at this point. I mean, thankfully, this was late in the night, but I mean, this is going to be a disaster cleanup.
Well, so far, Fox News is reporting, as of the recording of this, that two people have been rescued, several are missing, and that they are using sonar to tell that there are cars at the bottom of the water. Mm-hmm. And so we know that there are going to be more casualties than anybody would like to admit. You know, the thing about this, Dennis, I'm not going to pretend that driving my 50-foot boat that I had, I've recently sold, that it compares to an oil tanker or a cargo tanker or anything of that nature. But you may also recall when we did the America the Beautiful, we went and we were on a pretty large ferry going up and down the Savannah River in Georgia, and we had access to the very front. And when I was looking, you know, when we were talking to the captain, I was looking at all the controls. They were very similar to the same kind of controls I had in my boat. So I want to just give people an indication about how I believe a tanker of this size is basically maneuvered. First of all, it's not like your little speedboat where you've got a steering wheel and you're going to sit there and turn it. It's not like the old movies where you'd see the captain of the ship or the pirate movies where the pirates are moving the big, huge wheel and that's how it moves. Although there is the ability to steer the boat, it is usually done from gear shifts that are more like handles, okay? Because in most of these boats, you will have what's called multiple thrusters along the side of the boat up into the front. Those thrusters move the boat from left to right, believe it or not. So, I mean, I used to be able to take my boat right up to a dock, especially on light days when there wasn't a lot of wind and a lot of current, and sit there and almost slide my boat to the left. It was really incredible how those thrusters work. But most boats of this size are going to wind up having two propellers in the back. And therefore, you kind of move it back and forth like this, and that's the way it is you steer. However, it is important to note that when they are navigating through these sort of lanes, there's two things that I know to be true. Number one, you have what's called a breadcrumb trail. So you follow the same trail going in than you do going out. And one of the reasons why you would do that is because the draft of your boat, the draft basically says how much of your boat is underneath the water. So if you have, let's say my boat used to have a 5-foot draft. Well, if I go into 5 feet of water, guess what's going to wind up happening? My boat's going to hit bottom. So a lot of times in these sort of rivers and these places where you're coming in and out of, a lot of times they've had to be dredged because what's happening with tides, it changes, and these boats have such large drafts. So it's very important to stay on the navigational trip that you took in when you go back out or vice versa, because it lets you know that you've already gone down that path and you've got nothing to worry about theoretically. So number one is when they left the boatyard, I'm sure that they put on their electronics and started right away to follow the same path in and the same path out. The second thing is about following that path is that you have an autopilot. And that autopilot, and I use this plenty of times when I would be out in the ocean, you have a navigational set, right? A longitude and latitude, if you will. You set it up there to the degrees. It's autopilot, and that autopilot stays on, and it basically keeps your ship on that trajectory that you're doing. Theoretically, both will match, and you'll be on your breadcrumb trail. So those are two important things to recognize, because when you look at this boat, at the very end, it's clearly trying to move a Titanic, where it's like, hey, we're in trouble. But the difference being is that the boat doesn't veer to the left as it should be, which would be called your port side. Yeah, so in boating, you don't lose left side, right side. It's port, which is stands for, if you were standing at the helm looking out, your port is your left and your starboard is your right. So he doesn't go port as he should because the opening to the bridge is port. He turns starboard. And it almost looks to me as if it's completely intentional to where he's, you know, going, and then all of a sudden it's sort of, oh no, let me crash into the freaking into the leg of the basis of the bridge.
Right, you're right. Because in the video he is going that direction, but then it seems like towards the very end, right before collapse, he is making the other degree turn. So maybe I'm just going to ask you the question directly.
Yeah.
Is this a DEI captain, do you think, or is this a cyber attack?
It's one or the other. I cannot believe that this is a trained captain making that sort of mistake, because when you look at the trajectory of that boat to begin with, it is, when it's far off, it is still on the wrong trajectory. It is heading toward, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And especially when you have a boat that size, to be that far off course that early on. Now, the other thing that's important to state is that as that boat is approaching the bridge, two times it appears to lose power in the sense that all the lights go out. Now, this is another important thing to understand, okay? You have, on a boat like that, multiple generators. So on my boat, I go back to the same thing. You know, my boat used to have air conditioning, and you had refrigeration and all the different things that you need to have power when you're not on shore. So if I were to park against the dock, I would plug my boat in. And when you leave the dock, you have nothing to plug in. So your generator is what's giving you those very important things. Your electronics are depending on that power, all right? You need the flow of that information coming in. You need to have power. So in that extent, when you see the lights go off, that is either it lost power and then another generator kicked on, because I'm sure boats like that have multiple generators. I only had one generator, right? I mean, Ryan could tell you, man, Ryan, we should probably do a thing about the story when our generator went dead and we were in 110 degrees and we had no power basically. But what winds up coming down is it goes off and then it kicks on. To me, that looks like a second generator kicked in. But then it happens again, which leads me to believe that now the second generator is going down. So when I look at the idea of a terror attack, a cyber attack, I wouldn't be surprised if that's it. And I wouldn't also be surprised if it was somebody on board who purposely turned off, you know, but that would have to be a coordinated thing. This to me is not an accident. Yeah. And I hate to be a conspiracy person, and it just isn't an accident, in the same way that the planes crashing into the Twin Towers were not an accident.
Well, I was even saying to Ryan, I mean, I don't even know if the intention necessarily was for the purposes of killing, because again, this was done at 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
Thankfully, not a lot on the bridge, but the long-term consequences of a bridge that is critical to a trade route now being collapsed and blocking out a harbor, and not to mention, I mean, that bridge is not going to be built overnight. I think Baltimore is in some serious trouble here.
Oh, absolutely. And look, here's the problem I have.
It's a 2-mile bridge.
Here's the problem I have with this whole thing is that even if it is an act of terror, be it from inside the boat or be it from somebody making controls outside the boat, you're never going to hear about it. They won't tell you. They're not going to send panic. The second thing is, if this is indeed a DEI situation, and you, I don't know if you said it here or not because I was taking notes, doesn't this company have a whole DEI posting or something of that nature, or is that just speculation?
Synergy Marine Group had kind of what almost every company at this point has, a diversity and inclusion page.
Not our.
Yeah.
I have a very simple blue book. A rule book. If your name isn't Lynch, you're not in my building. It's very simple. And that's for various different reasons. Trust me on that one. But if this winds up becoming a DEI situation where the captain of this boat was somebody who was thrust into a position and shouldn't have been, I mean, how many times do people have to die? How many collapses of one thing or another do we have in order to we say enough is enough? It's not about the color of your skin. It's not about the gender that you want to associate with. It is about your talent and your ability to do things as a professional. And I think what you're going to hear on this is that this was just a freak accident, and that it was machinery malfunctioning. And they'll come down and say the machinery wasn't inspected or the machinery was old. You'll hear something of that nature. But I will never believe it, simply because as a boat enthusiast and who have seen more boats come in and come out, I've been on some of these things. It is very, very straightforward. It is so hard to screw up a boat on these sizes. And that's why you don't see many accidents of this sort of thing happening. Last word on it goes to you, and let's go to Trump.
Well, I definitely pray for the people impacted by this. Hopefully, you know, the more there's more rescues, but at the same time, I mean, this is disastrous. And my big hope here is we actually get a lot of answers in the coming days as to what really did cause this.
Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. There was a very interesting story today on Fox News that I wanted us to talk about here a little bit. In yesterday's program, luckily, we did hear before we signed off that the appellate court lowered the bond for Trump to $175 million versus $450 million. And apparently this is something that Trump himself says he can cover through cash. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, there's something that I think most of us have been saying along the way, and that it just doesn't seem that this is something that's constitutional. This goes beyond the law, all right? Well, there's a very interesting article here. It says, legal experts say Trump's whopping New York fee could be excessive under Constitution, unheard of. Let me just give a little bit here. After scoring a major win Monday in the New York civil fraud case against him, legal experts weigh whether former President Donald Trump can appeal the $454 million judgment as a violation of his constitutional rights. The 45th president and presumptive GOP nominee in the 2024 election had until Monday to pay $454 million bond or face seizure of his assets by Attorney General Letitia James in accordance with an order by Judge Arthur Endogron. But just hours before the deadline, the New York appeals court slashed the bond by 60%, ordering Trump to pay $175 million while the case is appealed. Legal experts told Fox News Digital that one legal avenue Trump and his lawyers could and should pursue is trying to prove that the whopping half-billion figure violates a U.S. Constitution amendment that bans excessive fines. James sued Trump under a New York State executive law that gives broad investigative authority and that was designed to protect against consumer fraud. Keep in mind, there is not a single consumer in this entire
event. Yeah, I was just saying, what?
Right. She accused him and his company of inflating the values of properties. We know all that stuff. So it is unheard of to seek repayment of over $464 million when there was no identifiable victim and when the entities on the other side of all these transactions were sophisticated investors who conducted their own due diligence, said John Malcolm, a former assistant U.S. attorney in Atlanta. Notably, bank executives who worked with Trump testified in court that they were happy with their business dealings and even sought additional business from Trump. So now it's turning out to be that the legal experts are saying, hey, say, wait a second, the Constitution protects you in this, that you cannot be given excessive fines that everybody knows you cannot pay. And therefore, that is unconstitutional. So I think what's happening here is that slowly but surely, each little broken brick in Letitia James' plan to take down Trump is slowly but surely crumbling.
Well, look, I mean, I think it's obvious to anyone with eyes and ears that, I mean, the entire case, as we discussed heavily yesterday, is just kind of bogus. While it's great that the appeals court, you know, did give him like the open leg room here to not have to pay the full $454 million, you know, that's still an excessive fine that he still has to put
$175 million, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, this is a former president and we watched one of his press conference yesterday, after he had gone to the Manhattan court, you know, and he said, like, name me a president that's ever had to go through anything that I'm going through right now. And that's why I'm hoping, as you just kind of laid it out, I'm hoping the bricks of Letitia's plan just continue to crumble here, because this is insane. Truthfully, he should not be paying a dollar. I mean, we know that, you know, I mean, because I continuously question, where is this money actually going to go to? No one was wronged. All the banks were happy. The loans were paid. And, you know, then you got Letitia James and Engeron and Michael Cohen all saying, like, oh, the money's going to go to the people of New York. No, it's not. You know, or at least it's not going to go for the purposes that they claim it's going to. And even so, that money is not meant to be going to anyone other than Trump himself.
Look, the attack on Trump is coming from all ends, civil, criminal, and yet he hasn't done a single thing wrong. The only thing that you can say that he may have done wrong is the fact that he had classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. However, what's good for the goose must be good for the gander. And Biden had multiple documents in multiple different places, and basically nothing happened. This is not the first time that documents have been found where they shouldn't be. And in Trump's case, what they did in raiding his home in the middle of the night is just pure ridiculousness and shows that there is a concerted effort on every level, in every agency, and in both parties to keep Donald J. Trump from being able to run for president and win. The only thing that is holding up Donald J. Trump at this point right now is the support he has from the American people. It is so strong. It is so robust. If he was, let's say, for instance, him and DeSantis were still, if DeSantis was still in the game, and we were looking at primaries where these two were going neck and neck, I think Trump's situation here would be far worse for him, because people would be saying, oh, you know, we got DeSantis or whatever it may be. But it's not. It's Trump. And it's Trump and only Trump. And so they are walking, the left is walking such a fine line. And it's like this to me, and then I want to move on to something with DeSantis, by the way. It's sort of like, have you ever gone down, you make a wrong turn, and you're going down the road, and you keep on going, and your better judgment tells you to stop, you've gone the wrong way, and you should turn around and go back, but you say, my God, we've committed this far, let's keep going. Mm-hmm. And then you get all the way to the end of the road and you figure out the dead end and you say, damn it, I wish I would have stopped when I thought it. Should have followed my gut. The Democrats right now have had multiple times to turn around and just say, let's just try to beat them on what we warrant to be our bullet points. We're going to protect people to have an abortion. We are going to defund the police. We are going to keep the borders open. All these things that we stand for right now. Why don't we just stand up against them? Ultimately, the Democrats realize that they only have one choice. They got to just keep on driving down that bad road and hope that it doesn't end with Trump being the president of the United States. They are so far down that road, they're deciding not to turn it around. And I think it is. I think, like I said 2 seconds ago, it is crumbling in front of them, piece by piece, brick by brick. And with each passing day, when I see things like this, I feel a little better that I think Donald J. Trump actually may be the next president of the United States. I think he has a real, real great chance of winning. And if he does, I'm going to use the word, it is going to be a bloodbath, because these people who went after him are going to have some prices to pay. They really are going to have some prices to pay. I don't know how they're going to pay, but he will find a way to where he is not going to let corruption ring as it is ringing right now very, very loudly. Now, with that being said, another Republican who is really trying to make things happen as they should is Ron DeSantis in the state of Florida. Dennis, talk about a new law that he just put into place.
Well, he signed a bill, which will become a law, that by 2025, if you have a 14-year-old who's a Florida resident and that 14-year-old has a social media account, and this is 14 and under, so 14 and under, that is officially banned. Like, you cannot have a minor of 14 and under operating and owning a social media account.
Of any kind?
Of any kind.
Not Facebook, not WhatsApp, nothing.
No, and if it's discovered, the parents will be basically fined. Yes, yeah.
I like this.
And Wokeness had tweeted about it, and he had wrote, let's check back in 5 to 10 years after this is implemented, and I bet there'll be a sudden massive drop in the number of new LGBTQ+ kids in Florida. Productivity will skyrocket it, and anxiety and depression will drop. Experts, or liberal experts, will be baffled and puzzled, which, again, is true. I mean, if you're an avid listener to the show, we've discussed especially TikTok, the influence it's had on our generation to the point where Gen Z by like 25% is identifying as LGBTQ. I mean, you look at the TikTok in China and Russia, and it's mathematics and science. You look at American TikTok, it's gender ideology and how to castrate yourself at 13. So this is a great move. Hopefully some other big time, because I don't have any faith in the Democrats, but hopefully some other big time Republican governors can get behind similar measures. Because truthfully, you know, I mean, at 14, I didn't have a social media account. I mean, it wasn't as big back then as it is now. I know we kind of held the line even with Kelly. So, you know, to have a social media account at that age and under, first of all, it makes no sense. Like, you know, go out and play, you know, while we still can. And it just, it ruins the mind in many ways. You get lost into comparing yourself to other people. You get exposed to weird content, like the whole, all the LGBT stuff. It's just not good. So I'm glad that DeSantis is doing another hard hitting bill here to say, hey, you know, let's protect the kids.
I love this. I love this bill. To your point, anybody who's watched or listened to this show for quite some time knows that my feeling is that the root of all evil in our country right now is social media. And look, I just went to Key West over the weekend. You know, I'm there with the oldest one of us was 62. The youngest one of us is me at 54 and a half. And we were talking about when we grew up, what we had, what we didn't have. And we spoke about how it is that we didn't have social media. So if you took away social media from the youngster, and I would make an argument that even 14, let's raise it a little bit higher. Let's make it the driving age, or let's make it the drinking. Well, drinking age, 21's a little bit late. But I mean, maybe anybody who is in senior year or lower, that you just can't have it in the same way that you can't drink beer when you're in high school, right? I mean, can you drink beer? Sure, I drank beer, right? When I was in high school, I was able to handle two or three beers, but that's about it, right? So you're not supposed to be doing it. If this is implemented the way it should be here in Florida, you are going to see three things inevitably happen. The mental health situation in Florida for children is going to get far better. Number two, the physical health will get far better. One of the things we were talking about over the weekend is that when we grew up, there were no fat kids. If you had one fat kid or two fat kids in your class, let alone in your school, it was a lot. Now, the majority of kids in school are fat. And the big reason why is because now they're playing with the electronics, they're playing with the, you know, the internet, they're playing on their social media, and they're not playing soccer, they're not playing football, they're not playing baseball, they're not doing it at the levels where we had to. We went out and played kickball every day. We played Ring Olivia. We played tag. We went out and kept ourselves busy. Now you're sitting there and you're jerking around on this device. So the mental aspect, like you were saying about all these people starting to think that they want to change their genders, or everybody else is living a great life and I'm not, because everybody, you know, exemplifies this this sort of idea that my life is great. Look at all my pictures and my videos. And then the third aspect of this, which may be equally as important as the first two, is that our country right now is looking at a pitiful, and I mean pitiful, future. Because not only are we getting inundated with third world migrants that have absolutely no education, but our kids, and tomorrow, this is fantastic leadway, we'll talk about this, tomorrow this program is going to be an interview with Tiffany Justice, who's the lead of Moms for Liberty. And the beginning of that conversation is going to be about how poorly our students are doing when it comes to the basics. And maybe, just maybe, kids will have to focus back in on their education instead of, you know, wanting to be the next YouTube star. So I love this whole thing. I hope it catches fire and that other states follow in tandem. I mean, you'll know it never will be the Democrat state that does it, but you know, Florida is going to be the litmus test on this, Dennis. And by next year, this time, we'll start seeing what the improvements are or are not. And then maybe you start seeing some other red states follow through. And I think that would be an absolute great thing. As far as youngsters go, our next story sort of correlates with that in one way or another. Maybe, we don't know what the ages here are, but there is a hip hop star. Maybe some of you know who he is. I'm sure most people don't. There's a guy named Sean Combs, also known as P. Diddy. And this guy is one of the biggest, I guess you would call hip hop stars in the world, let alone the country. And right now, the word is that he is fleeing America, that he has left America, and that the Department of Homeland Security was at his home, raiding his home.
Two homes,
for what appears to be a claim of human trafficking. So I don't know if this is for minors, if this is for people who are older than 18. I have no idea, but this does not sound like a very good story for old Mr. P. Diddy.
No, this could be a whole podcast itself, but because this story's been kind of ongoing, the best way to describe P. Diddy other than a rapper is he is basically the black Jeffrey Epstein. He's the reason Justin Bieber is big. He has this method of getting some pop stars under his belt, almost quite literally, if you understand the innuendo I just made, then blackmails them with videotape footage, which has been kind of released over the last few weeks. He did it with another rapper that Ryan and I are familiar with, basically outed this guy. But yeah, P. Diddy got raided not by the FBI, but by Homeland Security for sex trafficking of minors. His Los Angeles and Miami homes were raided basically yesterday. Someone likely tipped him off because his jet fled to Antigua, which is in the Caribbean. It's suspected that it's either just him or him with a bunch of videotapes and basically evidence proving that he has been doing this sex trafficking operation. But look, I mean, he's not your typical rapper. He's a very well-connected man. I mean, he basically answers to Clive Davis, who is the emperor, sort of say, of the Hollywood music industry. And look, we all know Hollywood is beyond messed up. And I feel like year after year, we keep hearing more horror stories of just how messed up it is. So this is not good. I mean, P. Diddy fleeing the country, it's very obvious that not that they just found out that he is guilty of all this stuff. It's almost like they're making him out to be the fall guy. Because again, a lot of these sex trafficking rings, as you know, they could be pretty freaking extensive when it goes up the ladder. So the fact that he is fleeing by all means just shows his guilt, but it also kind of just shows that maybe this little secret empire of him, like, you know, there's kind of stories coming out that he was abusing Justin Bieber. And if that name sounds familiar, it's one of the biggest pop stars in the world. And he founded Justin Bieber when he was about 12 or 13. There's even a video where he's talking about Justin Bieber having a 2-day sleepover at his house. You know, back then, maybe people just didn't really open an eye to that. But now when you see the context of all this, it's concerning. But a big strategy of P. Diddy's was that, like Bieber's, like the rapper we know about, he would invite them into their home, get them a little acclimated. And if you ever wonder how a lot of these guys become the big guys, it's mostly because they become compromised with blackmail. He'll get them on video doing some things at his house that they don't want to be released.
You said that, and I just want to interrupt by saying, these are the allegations. It's, you know, he has never been convicted of these things. He has never spent a day in jail over these things. So they are allegations. So we want to be very clear on this show that we are right now representing the allegations that are against him.
Yes.
But when you look at all the things that are unfolding today, these allegations start to make you think as if, well, maybe they're actually fact. But at the end of the day, just like Trump, every person is entitled to their fair day in court. However, it ain't going to look good for Mr. P. Diddy.
No, who, and just a reminder, Homeland Security is doing this, not FBI. In fact, maybe Ryan can overlay some of the footage of, I mean, basically armed guards storming his houses. So, yeah, this will be a developing story, and I'm very curious to see maybe if we're going to get a little more of a spotlight on the corruption of the music industry.
Well, we'll let that unfold and we'll let that sort of simmer a little bit. I'm sure there's going to be more to it, just like our ship story will as well. We are going to now move into a very interesting part of this program, which is going to be about, you named it, illegal immigration and what's happening. I mean, every single day, it is like the news stories that come up basically overshadow the ones from the day before. And it's becoming so rapid in development that it's neck breaking. And we feel as if we have an obligation to report all of this to you and give you our commentary and thoughts on it. I want to start off with something, Dennis, that we didn't have on our list, and I just saw it popped up on my phone here. It's relative, but Mexican President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador warned on Sunday during an interview with 60 Minutes that unless the United States complies with Latin America's requests for aid, the tide of migrants will continue to come to the United States. In January, Obrador issued a series of demands for what the U.S. must do to stop the flow of migrants to the border, ranging from sending Latin American countries $20 billion in aid a year to granting some level of amnesty to illegal workers in the United States. Mexico has reportedly taken some state-level action to curb mass migration at President Biden's request, making crossings drop. BS. However, the number of migrants began to rise again in February, with Border Patrol expecting another surge in the spring, meaning what's coming up. 60 Minutes. Everyone thinks you have the power in the moment to slow down migration. Do you plan to do such a thing? This is what 60 Minutes asks the president. And basically, he comes back and says, we do, and we want to continue doing it, but we do want for the root causes to be attended to, for them to be seriously looked at. Alfonso also noted Obrador's demands for the U.S. to send $20 billion a year to Latin American countries. If they don't do it, the things that you've said need to be done, then what? She asked. And he said, the flow of migrants will continue. So in other words, we're being held victim. There's a ransom. And it is more corruption. You give Latin America $20 billion every single year, and we'll do our part to make sure that the migrant flow slows down. But of course, Dennis, there's no guarantee. So after we go 3 years, let's say $60 billion, and then all of a sudden they decide, well, you know what? $20 billion a year is not enough. We're going to need $40 billion. They open the gates again and keep on flooding. I get so angry that we allow a corrupt dude like that to get on our media and make claims that the only way to stop people coming to the United States is by us having to pay $20 billion for other countries to get their act together. First of all, it would be the stupidest plan in the world, and that's why we have to worry about Biden and his company doing that. Secondly, the American citizen who is funding that $20 billion is barely holding on right now. And what is the answer to what we're going to do with the 50, 60 million people who are here right now sucking off the teat of every single last American? That's not the way to solve this problem, Mr. President of Mexico. That's the way you want to do it, okay? There's only one way to solve this problem. It's called tough love. Donald J. Trump needs to get into office. He needs to expand ICE. He needs to basically deputize almost every single agency that's out there to be able to force immigration laws, including local municipalities, sheriffs, you name it. And we need to start doing mass deportation and taking the cash from the people as they're leaving. That will send a very clear message. You come here, you're going home with nothing. You understand? Then we need to start arresting the people who hire these folks and people who basically aid and abet these folks. That will also stop it here in the United States. The guy who is hiring these people will absolutely stop. And then the third part is that we're going to send a message around the world that says, guess what? If you're coming here because you think you're going to get a job and free school, you're not. You're getting nothing. You will get nothing. You do that, people will stop coming. And I am not going to believe, Dennis, that El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico can't get their affairs in order because we have proof in the pudding that one country named El Salvador is doing everything they possibly can to stop the crime wave that has basically made that a third world poop hole. I won't use the word, S-H-I-T because we're on Facebook. Why don't you tell the people what they're about to see from El Salvador, what the president there did?
Yeah, Ryan can overlay this as well, because a few days ago, and this is from their president, Bukele, here, A few days ago, there were two homicides in the northern part of our country. We have already captured the two culprits, members of the 18 Sereños gang. At this moment, 5,000 soldiers and 1,000 police officers have surrounded the districts of San Jose Canasca, San Antonio Los Ranchos, Ponosnico, and San Isidro Labrador to completely dismantle the gang. We are not going to stop until we eradicate what little remains of these gangs. So, I mean, you could, if you're watching, you'll see in the video, it's, as he writes in the tweet, thousands of soldiers, thousands of police officers. I mean, El Salvador, since he's taken over, is actually one of the top-rated safest countries in the Western Hemisphere now. You know, I would love to see if the U.S. could have this kind of response to any kind of homicide. But to your point, you know, like, why can't we, you know, hold someone like Mexico accountable? I mean, I was reading, you know, a post on X the other day. We're so busy being bothered in Ukraine or even Israel and other things that are not in our backyard. And yet the people we really, if we had to go to war with, it should be Mexico. They are abusing not only the border, but this leveraging of, if you don't give us money, because we know where a lot of that money is going to end up going to, cartels, then, you know, we're just going to send you all these migrants. And we just talked about DeSantis earlier. I mean, you know, I know Trump will get that border together if he gets into office, but, you know, DeSantis had that rhetoric too of, like, you know, like, stone cold kill them. I mean, not saying I'm advocating for murder, but I'm advocating for, let's strengthen that border. Let's not take in all these migrants, and let's actually hold Mexico accountable for all the crazy actions that they've been committing over the years.
Well, the stone cold comment was regarding the cartel and not migrants coming over.
No, that's what I mean. Right, the cartel.
Right. The simplicity of fixing this problem is basically an executive order. The president of the United States has the power to determine if a group of people presents a national threat to the United States of America. He could cut off any immigration source whatsoever. In this particular case, I think it's worldwide. All immigration should come to an absolute halt because we are now putting our citizens in harm's way at a grave level. And we're going to talk about that right now. We're going to give a story, another story that's just heart-wrenching and, again, leaves Joe Biden as being what I consider to be a co-conspirator. Mexico is a co-conspirator. They are a co-conspirator in flooding this country with drugs, flooding this country with migrants, flooding this country with terrorists. So anybody who says that they're a good neighbor is absolutely out of their brain. It's that simple. Now, with that being said, we have so many things here that we're going to tell you about in the next couple of minutes, about a 25-year-old who was killed now at the hands of another illegal alien. We're going to talk about somebody in Texas who is just arrested on child molestation. We're going to show you a secret compound that was just recorded secretly out of Brooklyn, New York. Wait until you see this thing. There are press releases coming out. Bill Malugin from Fox News says, wait until you hear who we've arrested just in one day along the border. We're going to give you that. And then there's another massive caravan heading. It's massive, and we've got video of that. But we can't do it here on Facebook. We can't do it here on Apple Podcasts. We can't do it here on YouTube because they will not allow this sort of topic to be shown and discussed at the level to where it needs to be. Not because there's anything evil in it, just because they don't think it's a fair thing to be saying to the poor migrants. So to that extent, if you are on those platforms, we have to say goodbye right now. The way that you could capture this show in its entirety every single day is very simple. You go to the DML News app, which you could download from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store for free. You go to the fifth tab, which is called the Interact tab. At the very top, it says Team DML Memberships. You can join Team DML. The advantages of doing that are so many that I'm not going to list them here. I'll just let you go and see it when you get there. But for as little as $2.50 every single month, you can wind up getting ad-free news. You could wind up being involved in a chat system, a live chat, where it's all like-minded people. And you get to have all of our shows, not just this one, but the Wine and Talk and all the other programs that we've created and continue to create. You get them in real time, and you get them in archives. You never miss a dang thing. And this is what we're building. We need you as a member in order to be able to stay in business. So please, two different ways. Like I said, I already told you, download the DML News app, go to tab 5, interact, hit Team DML Memberships. You could choose your membership level and you join. Or if you don't have an app, if you don't have a smartphone, just use your computer and go to teamdml.com and you could do it that way as well. We're going to have to say goodbye now. So this way we could start talking about topics in their full capacity as they should be spoken about.
Get the Dennis Michael Lynch podcast every day by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and download the DML News app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store for breaking news, merchandise, films, exclusive content, and Team DML.